Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And hello, welcome in. It's a Wednesday edition of the Hoosier Report here on the Big X Sports Radio, 1450 AM, 96.1 FM, and of course we're streaming online at BigXSportsRadio.com. Glad to have you with us. A lot to get to today. IU in Maryland on Friday, that's the next game for the Hoosiers. Plenty of things leading up to that date and that game, however, and we're glad that you are with us today. Let's take a look at the guest lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham here on the Hoosier Report. Segment one, we have Hoosier headlines, our news of the day for Southern Indiana sports and IU-related stuff presented by Hoopster Sports Grill. And we'll take a look at Big Ten basketball yesterday. Last night, I mentioned yesterday on the program, lots of good games. I'm excited to watch a lot of Big Ten basketball this season, even outside of IU games. And there were a couple games of interest last night. We'll recap those. We'll talk some high school notes. Also a big EuroLeague game today involving Coach Rick Pitino. We all know that he left shortly after Christmas to take on at least a temporary assignment for the Greek team in the EuroLeague, and they will take on Braden Hobbs and his team out of Germany today in a EuroLeague game that will have some playoff implications. We'll talk about that for just a moment as well. And we'll talk, speaking of high school notes, a little note about Warren Central. Of course, everyone remembers their great win over New Albany, heroics by David Bell, who just recently committed to Purdue for football and has been injured. He hasn't played basketball so far this season, but is expected to return to the Warren Central lineup pretty soon. They are reaching history with their win streak. We'll tell you where they're at and how far they have to go until potentially they could be the all-time most consecutive winning games team in the state of Indiana. We'll do all that in segment one. Then coming up later in the program, we have Jeff Rabjohns of Pigs.com. We'll take a long look at a lot of IU stuff. I've got a lot of notes for Jeff today. We'll start with this IU team and where they're at today. We'll start. We'll then go to the Maryland game and take a look a little more in depth than what we did yesterday at Maryland, a young team that I think will be a tough game on the road for Indiana, very challenging game for sure. And we'll get to some recruiting nuggets and notes as well, and might even bring in a little football with Jeff when he's with us today on the program. That's the guest lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison, and you'll receive $1 off your box lunch at Honey Baked Ham. Let's take a look at some Hoosier headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. And I love the Big Ten this year, and I think the rest of the country is beginning to find out how good this Big Ten conference is. And there was a couple games last night of interest. Maryland was in action, and of course that game is of interest because that's where Indiana will be at on Friday in their next conference game. Maryland, a winner last night, 82-67 over Minnesota. Maryland 13-3 on the season after that game. They are 4-1 in the Big Ten Conference. And Anthony Cowan, he was the big scorer last night for Maryland, a name that we'll be talking about as the week moves forward, I'm sure. He had a new career high last night, 27 points. Also, freshman Jalen Smith had a big game as well for Maryland, so two early names to think about when you match up IU against Maryland. And the game really of interest outside of following Maryland a little bit, because that's IU's next opponent, was Purdue. They were at number 6-ranked Michigan State, and it was a fairly competitive game with about 10 minutes left in the contest. Purdue was down by 4 points, but the final score, 77-59. Michigan State closed the game very, very strongly. They improved to 14-2 overall. They are a perfect 5-0 in the Big Ten Conference. Purdue, 9-6 overall, 2-2 in the Big Ten. They've struggled to win on the road. They haven't won on the road since back in November, I believe, for their team. So Michigan State looking good. Michigan, we know, looking good firsthand. IU fans got a chance to see them up close and personal on Sunday. And interesting enough, I mean, everybody thinks about, you know, there's two undefeated teams now in the Big Ten, Michigan and Michigan State. Everybody thinks, my goodness, those two teams are both really good. We think Michigan could be a Final Four type team. Michigan's number two. Michigan State's number six. When do they play? Well, it's one of the protected rivalries in the Big Ten, which is something newer to the Big Ten Conference. They weren't the first to the table like some of the other conferences with that. Indiana-Purdue, another example of a protected rivalry where no matter what the league schedule is for the year, you can be guaranteed that these protected rivals will go against each other twice. So Michigan and Michigan State will play a home-and-home with each other. However, they don't play until February 24th, which is pretty late in the season. That's a primetime game on a Saturday at Michigan, is Michigan State on the road. And then they come back for their second game, and it's actually Michigan State, and I believe Michigan as well, their final game of conference play right before the conference tournament, March 9th. It's Michigan State at, Michigan at Michigan State. So those two teams will have two great battles. I don't know that I see either one of them as good as they are, making it all the way to that February 24th date, still undefeated in conference play. But those two late games could have a big impact at the very top of the conference standings, at least between Michigan and Michigan State. I thought that was interesting as we begin to get into the full Big Ten schedule, start to see how things shake out. Two undefeated teams now. They don't play each other until really late in the conference schedule. Couple notes from the high school level. Updated Associated Press poll out yesterday. The Indiana Basketball Coaches Association poll out as well. Floyd Central, they are still at number three in the 4A Associated Press poll at 9-1. They received three first place votes, and they're behind Warren Central and Carmel in the third spot. Top five rounding that out would be Indianapolis Cathedral and Lawrence Central as well, who defeated New Albany handily at the Noblesville Holiday Tournament. Class 3A, the only local team ranked from our immediate Clark and Floyd County areas, Silver Creek, they are 10-1 and ranked number six in 3A. No one in 2A and no one in 1A, continuing to not be have any representatives in those two classifications, at least here over the last few weeks. Also in the coaches poll, Floyd Central is fifth at 9-1. Also in that top 20, no one else from the immediate area but Jeffersonville, New Albany, and Silver Creek. They are all receiving votes in the IBCA poll, which is voted on by high school coaches here in the state of Indiana. Also, yesterday, the IHSA announced its girls and boys state tournament pairing shows. The girls show coming up January 20th. That's a Sunday at 3:30, and I say that because we are that close to finding out the postseason paths for girls basketball. That is how quickly this high school season is getting away from us. The 109th boys state tournament announced on February 17th, so we are about 5 weeks away, believe it or not, from at least knowing the pairings for the boys' sectionals, which begin that final Tuesday in February, and of course the semifinal and championships of those boys' sectional on that first full weekend in March. But hard to believe that as quick as we're moving through things, the pairings just around the corner for high school basketball. I saw this, actually Scott Davenport, the Bellarmine coach, tweeted this out earlier this morning. A very big professional basketball game, European style today in the Euro League, which is noted as the second best league in the world behind the NBA. Some great talent, a lot of NBA capable talent in that league. Today, Bellarmine graduate, New Albany graduate, Braden Hobbs, his team in Germany will take on the new team that Rick Pitino is coaching to finish out the season in Greek, and it's a game, as Coach Davenport tweets, that has some postseason ramifications, as Braden's team in Germany is currently eighth in the standings. Coach Pitino's team in Greece is ninth in the standings, and only the top eight make the EuroLeague playoffs. So a big game today. Braden Hobbs has had a tremendous long-standing career overseas. He's played at times a couple different leagues, Australia in the offseason, playing somewhere in Europe in the main part of the season as well. He's on a great top-level Euro team. Obviously, to be in the EuroLeague, you've got to be one of the very best in that continent. He's getting some great opportunities, not playing or scoring like he was in some of the lesser leagues, especially as he would be considered a real veteran now in European basketball. Still a young man with a bright future ahead of him, but his days playing basketball probably on the back end for sure, but he is going to maybe finish up or going to in this latter stage at the very best level that European basketball has to offer. So that will be an interesting game to follow. I think it's a 2 o'clock tip later today. I have no idea. I'm sure it's someplace. Not sure if it's free or you got to pay, but I'm sure it's available to watch online. I know a lot of Rick Pitino fans able to follow him with his Greek team online as well. So I'm sure that game will be webcast somewhere also. And a couple other things. One other high school note. I found this very interesting. I saw this today from Kyle Neddenrip. Warren Central with a win last night to start the Marion County tournament, which is it doesn't obviously include any of our local teams, but it is just a absolute tough tournament. So much good talent, so many good teams out of Marion County, and it's a really good read at the mid part of the season on who is the best team or two coming out of the Indianapolis and greater Indianapolis area. But Warren Central was victorious last night easily in their opener of the Marion County tournament. They have now won 42 consecutive boys high school basketball games, and they are not too far off from the opportunity to tie or set a new record. And I thought I would mention this. I found it very interesting. At just ahead of Warren Central, they are currently fourth in the consecutive wins list for boys teams. Ahead of them is Crispus Attucks, a great Crispus Attucks team, 1955 through 56. They won 45 high school games in a row. Bloomington South, a much more modern team that people would remember from some battles with New Albany and Jeffersonville in these years, from 2008 to 2010, Bloomington South won 49 consecutive games. They are currently the number two streak for consecutive wins in high school basketball. And Lawrence North, they currently hold the record. That was that 2005-06 streak where they had Greg Oden, Mike Conley, and were just very dominant, winning back-to-back championships at the 4A level. They won 50 consecutive games between 2005 and 2006. So Warren Central, they're nearing that record, and the crazy thing is their star player and star football standout, David Bell, has been injured. I mentioned he committed to Purdue over the weekend on Sunday. He's due back on the basketball court for his senior year very soon now that he's close to being healed, but they have a chance to get there. However, they're going to have to win a number of really big games. Kyle was breaking their pathway to the record down in a story earlier today. They've got, of course, the Marion County tournament, which could include a game against Lawrence Central, who's really good. They've got to play Lawrence Central in the regular season. They've got to play Center Grove. That would be the actual game that would get them to 51 if they could win that game and stay undefeated between now and then. That was a classic when they met a couple weeks ago at the Hall of Fame Classic in the championship game. And I think most notable about this Warren Central team is the number of close games or come-from-behind games that they have won. I can remember going into the Semi-State a year ago, Warren Central, New Albany at Seymour, previewing that game, talking to Coach Byers on the Big X about the number of games just in that one season that they had been behind 5, 6, 7, 8, even double-digit in points late in the game and been able to come back and find a way to win. So they have got some good things going on their side. It will be really interesting to see if they can make it through the Marion County tournament for the second consecutive year as the champion. It will also be very interesting to see if they can beat Lawrence Central twice, once in the tournament, once in regular season, if they can beat Center Grove and some other tough competition along the way. Zionsville and North Central a little down this year. They got to play at Muncie Central as well. So a number of tough games upcoming, but that is something very interesting to see if they can tie or take the lead in consecutive wins. Really a lot of luck involved in that, but obviously a lot of talent and skill as well. They've had some great basketball and football players for that matter, and they won the 4A Girls Basketball Championship a year ago as well. That's a look at the headlines presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Hoopsters is your hometown sports grill where hometown fans watch hometown teams play. Hoopsters was voted as the best sports bar and best place to watch sports by the News and Tribune's Reader's Choice Awards. Hoopsters in Jeffersonville, where fun happens. We'll head to a commercial break. Jeff Rabjohns of Pigs.com is next. Lots of IU basketball discussion, the upcoming game with Maryland. We'll talk recruiting and a lot more in an extended segment with Jeff coming up after this on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
All right, we're back on this Wednesday program. Jeff Rabjohns of Pigs.com is with me for a chat on IU basketball. A lot to get to. I'm going to start with the Big Ten Conference as a whole. We'll talk about Indiana and their upcoming game against Maryland and dip into some recruiting topics as well with Jeff in this segment. I want to start with the Big Ten as a whole. I got a chance to see some of the Purdue and Michigan State game last night, and I tell you what, I'd been sold completely on Michigan, especially after Sunday, that they are a very solid team that has the ability, I would think, to make a nice postseason run. And I said a couple times over the last week or so, maybe if you were going to pick a Final Four team out of the Big Ten Conference, I think they'd have to be the front runner at this point for that type of success. But after watching how Michigan State was able to close that game out against Purdue, I don't know. Michigan State's pretty good as well.
Yeah, I think both teams you look at, and clearly they are, the type of team that not only can win the league, but like you said, you look at them and you see Final Four possibilities. And I think that's why at the beginning of the year I thought 1-2 in the league as far as predictions was really, really easy, because I thought those two teams were above everybody else on both sides of the ball. And especially, it's really interesting with Michigan. You know, they hired Luke Jaklich last year as an assistant coach, one of the rising up-and-coming defensive minds in the game. That really changed their defense last year. It took them a little while to get there, but once they got it, they were different. And this year, I think you can look at them and say they've been good on defense from the jump. And I think that's what's really changed for them as far as making them a team that was very, very good, because they've been good offensively under John Beilein. But now they're really good on both sides of the ball. And I think that's what changed them. But I do agree with you that Michigan State is also an elite-level team. I really like how they're playing. They were able to go over to Ohio State and win without Josh Langford. I thought that was really impressive. And they've got good skill in the backcourt and on the perimeter with Cassius Winston, Josh Langford, Matt McQuaid out there making threes and guys like that. But I really think the big thing is, on the inside, they've gone back to old school Michigan State basketball, and they're banging. I mean, just absolutely. I mean, they're not making it physical. This isn't contact sport. This is collision sport. They're there to slam into you and knock you out of the way. And that's not a criticism. It's just how they've chosen to play, because of the players that they missed on in recruiting and the guys they were able to get in Xavier Tillman and Nick Ward. I think Matt Painter said it was the most physical team he's seen in the Big Ten. And obviously, here's a guy who was a player in the Big Ten, an assistant coach for a year, and has been a head coach for more than a decade. So I think that's the thing about Michigan State. The one thing that will be interesting about Michigan State kind of the postseason is a little bit how the game gets called. You know, if they call the clutching and grabbing and holding they're supposed to call, Michigan State could get in trouble. If they let them play tackle basketball, Michigan State could go to the Final Four.
Jeff Rabjohns, Pigs.com, our guest. If you had to put a third Big Ten team in that group with Michigan and Michigan State as far as at the top of the conference, do you have a team you'd put in there? Or who would be next?
You know, I think right now I probably would put Wisconsin there, because of their incredible efficiency. And the fact that their efficiency has gotten better, and because they got a guy in Ethan Happ who is playing so well, both sides of the ball, averaging right at 20 and 10. I'll probably put Wisconsin there. Indiana is in contention. Certainly, they've been very good. Offensively and defensively, from an efficiency standpoint, they're top 35 in the nation in offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency, which is really, really good. And that's a considerable improvement for where they've been over most of the past 10, 12 years. They've been good on one side of the ball or the other, usually on offense previously, but now they're good on both sides. They've got two outstanding scorers in Juwan Morgan and Romeo Langford. Obviously, when Robert Phinisee is back, the offense runs very, very efficiently most of the time. I think everybody knows about the slow starts. That's an issue. But, Indiana's close. The problem with Indiana is they just struggle so much trying to shoot the ball from three. And in today's game, if you struggle this much from three, it's hard to have sustainable offensive efficiency unless you are just tremendous from two. And they certainly have a chance to be tremendous from two-point range. Morgan has been incredibly efficient. Romeo Langford's best skill is driving the ball. You can even make an argument that Devontae Green is better on the move to make a play to score than outside taking shots. So they've got a chance. But right now I'd probably go with Wisconsin in that third spot, at least right now. I'm not saying that's how they're going to finish. I'm just saying how they're playing right now, I'd probably go Wisconsin.
Jeff, while we're talking the Big Ten as a whole here, Maryland, a winner last night on the road at Minnesota, 82-67. Anthony Cowan set a new career high, 27 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. He had a very nice game for Maryland. They have him. They have some young talent, a team that Archie Miller said Monday night in his coach's show that he feels will get better as the conference season goes on. And as always, it's a Big Ten game on the road. We know those are tough. It doesn't really matter who the opponent is, a tough environment, and travel as well for the team to go through. They're entering now in the middle of a tough stretch of a number of road games for this team. But your thoughts on Maryland, on Cowan, on some of the young talent that they have as they're figuring things out in Big Ten play?
Yeah, well, I think, Cowan's very good. 6-foot junior guard. Very quick, has the ability to create offense for himself, can be a bailout guy as far as, if the shot clock's winding down, he can bail you out, usually get you a basket, or at least get you a reasonable shot. His passing has improved over the time he's been in college, especially his ability to find guys and get them the ball where they can do something with it. His assist rate is up to 24.4. That's a very, very good assist rate. And he's by far the best creator for them. And as you saw last night, he can score when necessary. One of the things that makes them really difficult to deal with is they've got two big men who could be productive in Jalen Smith, the 6'10", 15-pound freshman, and Bruno Fernando, the 6'10", 240-pound sophomore. And I think we probably should put 240 pounds in italics there because he might be a little more than that. Bruno Fernando is a load. And what makes those guys dangerous is both of them have been able to obviously score inside, but they've been able to score from the perimeter or at least mid-range extended. Jalen Smith, two games ago, made a three. Last night had a couple jumpers that were clearly on the perimeter. One was just a toe on the three-point line. So the thing is they've got those two guys who play a lot, usually start, both 6'10", who can play inside and out. Makes them a very difficult matchup. It's hard to deal with those two guys. The thing that Indiana might have on the other end of the floor, if those two guys are out there, one of them's going to have to chase somebody around, somebody who can really move. And that has the potential to open up an opportunity. It also has a chance to create an opportunity like when Indiana played Duke 2 years ago at home and Dwan Davis, instead of just going and sitting on the low block, would cut to spots, catch it, and make moves against Marvin Bagley. And Duran obviously had a terrific game that night against an outstanding team. That's kind of what you have to do against these two guys. You can't sit down there and wrestle with Fernando and Jalen Smith. It's not going to work. Indiana does not have anybody that you would say, okay, we're going to put you on the block. You run down there. You go to battle. It's the chance of it being productive are very, very low. But what you can do is attack them with movement and cutting and trying to get guys there guarding to play inside out as well. So those two guys are obviously really important. Aaron Wiggins has been really solid, 6'6 freshman. He's somebody else to pay attention to. Eric Ayala, 6'5 guard, who's another freshman, is another guy to really pay attention to. He's a guy that Indiana recruited for a little while from up in the Delaware area. Had an outstanding AAU career for the We Are One program. I think he's a guy who's going to be really solid over time, has really nice size for a guard. And I think he's, because he doesn't have an overall burst, I think he projects as a 3 or 4 year college player. So Iowa is somebody you're going to probably hear about for a ways to come. But those are the things to me that jump out the most when you look at this Maryland team.
And per normal, Jeff, in the Big Ten, if you're on the road, you can almost buckle your seatbelt and somewhat expect a tough game. Maryland coming off a road win themselves at Minnesota. Now they'll return home, so that always adds a spark for whoever you're playing, wherever the game may be at, as we always discuss.
Sure, it does. And, the road venues in the Big Ten are the venues. It's road for Indiana, but it's just the venue for the home team are very, very good. And I actually think they're underrated. I think, those of us who have been incredibly fortunate to have the opportunity where our job is, travel to games, have had the opportunity to see some of these venues. I know some fans have the opportunity to get out once in a while. And, if you have a chance to go see some of these road games, I know it's tough in January and February. People are working. It's not normal vacation time. But it is really worthwhile. The venues are outstanding. I think they're some of the best in the country. They're certainly elite venues overall. And, having had a chance to even go see some games in Big 12 arenas, in ACC arenas, even in, 5 Pac-12 arenas over my career, I would put the Big Ten overall in the atmospheres probably number one in the country because, the ACC has a headline atmosphere in Duke, but it's only 8,000 people. If you want to know what Cameron Indoor Stadium is like, think about Assembly Hall for a big game, cut it in half. There you go. So Assembly Hall obviously is significantly better. Even in North Carolina, people have said it for years. The wine and cheese crowd dominates the lower bowl. They do. Every once in a while, it'll get really loud there, but not a lot. It's more of a, I think somebody one time a couple of years ago had a great line, going to the Dean Dome is like watching people watch the Rose Bowl parade. They're very happy to be there. They're very proud of it, but they're just there to watch. And I was like, that's a pretty good line. I can't remember who wrote that, but it was a very good line. But the atmospheres in the Big Ten are different. They're aggressive. There are usually, most of the time, there are strong pockets of students somewhere in the lower bowl area. And obviously Maryland, you get the wall, which is on the one end. It kind of goes up vertically, just goes straight up. I mean, not straight up in the air, but it angles properly, but it's just one section and it's all students and they get rowdy and have some fun. So the winning games in the Big Ten on the road in the Big Ten is very difficult. The teams are usually pretty good and the atmospheres are, most of them are pretty aggressive. And I don't even throw Nebraska in there. Their building no longer is new. It's been there for several years now, but they're getting students involved. They're getting good crowds. You can look at their attendance numbers. I think they've been around top 20 in the nation now for a couple years in a row. So they're even getting good crowds. And obviously places like, I would put Indiana number one. I think everybody would agree with that. And that's not a homer call. That's just, I think everybody would agree with that. But you got places, Purdue, when they're good and that place is rocking, it's a hard place to go play. Ohio State students are very aggressive. A little vulgar, I think, for most people's taste, but Ohio State's comfortable with it, so it is what it is. But it makes it for a tough atmosphere. Michigan State's good atmosphere. Michigan, as we saw, was pretty good. But you hit it on the head. I mean, it's tough to win games in the Big Ten because usually the teams are good and the atmospheres are difficult. It's a tough task.
I know I'm getting a little off topic with this, but we'll get back to IU, I promise, in just a second. When I think about Cameron Indoor, and I've never been, it's one of the places in college basketball that I really, really want to go see a game. I think about Seymour, Lloyd E. Scott Gymnasium. It's 8,100 people, and we just recently, over the last couple sectionals, got the chance to see that place full to the rafters with standing room and very loud crowds into it. And I've always thought about Cameron Indoor when someone talks about the environment or how loud it is, even though it only seats 8,000 or so people. I've always, in my mind, wondered if it would be something similar to those lines. That's very similar in the capacity and very into it crowds over the last couple of years. So maybe you can say yes or no, but for a fan wondering, wonder what it's like to be in Cameron Indoor, a great place, a traditional place, even though it only seats 8,000. That's at least what's in my head. Are we close there or no?
Yeah, you know, I've never thought about that, but that's a really good point, man. I mean, Cameron is just a touch bigger. I think they list 9,300 as their capacity, okay, right around 9,300. So it's just a touch better, but I never really thought about that. But, yeah, that's a really good comparison. The gyms are actually kind of similar in how they're set up. You know, it's straight along the ends and kind of curves or straight along the sides, a little bit curved on the end there at Seymour. But it's one basic section on both sides and on both ends. Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense.
Just curious.
And I'm not too sure it doesn't get louder at Seymour because, I mean, Cameron is cool. But I'm going to get crushed for saying this, but it gets overblown by ESPN as if it's the greatest thing in the history of basketball. I mean, it is cool. I agree with that. And having all those students – stand, have the opportunity to stand right there, you know, on court level, not filling those seats, you know, with high dollar boosters who may not really be into it. That's a terrific decision by the school. I agree 100% with that. And it is cool, and it is up there. But sometimes the Dick Vitales of the world act like, you know, God reached in and put his touched his finger, and boom, you know, Cameron Indoor blossom from the ground. It's cool, but it's like, you know, I mean, Seymour when it's full and Romeo's going head to head with, I don't know, Floyd Central and Kobe Barnes, you know, pick your matchup. I mean, they're very similar. They really are. And people in, you know, Duke people would never believe that because they believe anything on the campus of Duke is the greatest because it's on the campus of Duke.
Sure.
And you are not allowed to say anything, but they're the greatest. But we don't have to worry about them today. So I never really thought about those comparisons. That's actually a really good one. I would say I agree with that because I've been in Seymour for sectionals when it's been rocking, and I've been in Cameron for like 7, 8, 9 games now. I would say if you've been in Seymour when it's rocking, add another 1,000 people. That's Cameron Indoor Stadium.
Yeah, just curious if that was a fair comparison or not. You always want to know what something's like, and that's kind of what I pictured in my mind. That can be obviously very wrong sometime. Back to IU, Jeff Rabjohns is my guest of Pegs.com. You know, there was a time, Jeff, when we were talking about this IU team, talking about the depth of the team, and my goodness, with all the improvements that we read about and heard about in the offseason, how would Archie Miller ever get playing time for all these guys, even early in the year, to find out what he had and what lineups he could use? And despite all that, it's been quite the opposite, primarily because of injuries, some nagging that have lasted a long period of time, others that have kept certain players out a couple games. Heck, there have been some players now that have been injured multiple times within the same season. With that said, the bench support and scoring specifically off the bench that I think we all thought might be there, it may take a while to find or see what the rotation is like and who's able to do what, but that hasn't really been there because of injury. So I think when you look at important Big Ten games and games against teams like Michigan and Michigan State, which we've spent some time talking about today, if Indiana's going to win those games, they've got to find some help off the bench, specifically in the scoring area.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much mandatory unless you have a career game from multiple people among your starters. You're going to need something off the bench. And obviously with Tennessee out, that means Devontae Green is a starter, so you're not getting his points off the bench. You know, that kind of hurts. But in the IU or in the Michigan game, you know, you had guys playing you know, double-figure minutes and not scoring. But that's really not a helpful scenario at all. That's one of those things you look at and say, yeah, they definitely need, you know, something, you know, point-wise from the bench, you know. And then I think one of the problems is, you know, when Josh McRoberts goes out there and plays double-figure minutes and doesn't even take a shot, to me that's a little bit of a problem. Because he in the Michigan game played 22 minutes, didn't even attempt a shot. That's an awful lot of minutes without even attempting to score the ball. Now, he is a good passer. He is a good defender. You know, he makes hustle plays. But if you're playing 20-plus minutes, you at least have to be some kind of offensive threat, and he wasn't. So they've got to get something going from the bench. Now, if by chance Fantasy shows no concussion symptoms and he's able to play here on Friday, then that would mean Devontae Green most likely comes off the bench. That would probably give them some offense off the bench. Then if you got something from Devontae, there's your backcourt bench points. If you were even able to get 4 or 5 points from McRoberts, 4 or 5 points from Evan Fitzner, then maybe you're getting 10 points from your backcourt or from your frontcourt reserves. That would be much more along the lines of what you want. And then Deron Davis, you know, if he says he's able to go, you know, he warmed up at Michigan, but he said he wasn't able to go because of his ankle. You know, in a game like that where you're playing against bangers like Bruno Fernando and Jalen Smith, Deron fits a little bit better. And against the teams that try to run up and down and really have mobile bigs, he doesn't fit at all. Now, if Maryland is putting their big guys on the block, you know, Deron has a chance to really play. If they're putting them out on the perimeter and having them go inside, outside, pick and pop, screen and roll, different things like that, that's going to be tough for Deron. Mobility is not his game. So whether or not he would have an impact is a question. But at least if he's available, you've got somebody who potentially can get you some points on the front court. But definitely, I think in games, in Big Ten road games, I think you have to get something from your bench unless you're – you know, you have multiple career games, which is not the norm in the Big Ten road venue.
And Evan Fitzner, he had some moments early in the season, Jeff, where he came in, he absolutely knocked the bottom out of it, was red hot. We haven't seen that Evan Fitzner return much this season. Archie spoke about him some as well Monday on his coach's show about wanting to get him going more after some impressive outings early in the season. Do you think that he's going to be somebody that's going to make a return to the lineup in some serious minutes and get an opportunity to shoot the basketball and have some breakout performances? I think there was so much excitement about him in the offseason, which carried over to some great early season performances, but he's kind of faded since that point.
Yeah, he really has. I mean, I think the performance people loved the most was when IU knocked off nationally ranked Marquette. He went 4 for 4 from three and finished with 16 points. You know, he was 3 for 3 from three, had 12 points at number one Duke. Even though IU lost the game, his shooting was something that he kind of pointed to as noticeable. But he has not scored more than 5 points in the game since the Duke game. And he's had 3 games where he's been completely scoreless against Louisville, against Illinois, at Michigan, which during that stretch, you can make a case those are the 3 best teams that they played in that 6-game stretch there. So he's definitely really – his offensive production has fallen off. I think one of the things that we've seen in against Big Ten teams, they've figured out his scoring circles. They know exactly where he tries to go to get the ball, to get off his shot. And Michigan was even jumping – not only around the screen, they were jumping to the spot where he was trying to get to. They were just trying to beat him in spots. And IU had really struggled to even get him the ball in anywhere that was a good scoring circle for him. And a little bit of that was Fantasy was out. I think Fantasy may have been able to create something moving away to where he could make that reverse assist. But that's not really Devontae's strength. So, you know, you end up with getting one shot on the road at Michigan from three for Fitzner, and that's not nearly enough. So I think some of it is the scouting's really good. Some of it is, you know, he's not an extremely mobile guy. You know, that you have to kind of run action to get him open. So they're going to have to try to do that. And then the other thing is, you know, like I said, you know, the scouting in the Big Ten most of the time is pretty good, especially the teams that put an emphasis on defense. So I'm not going to be surprised if teams do what Michigan did and try to jump to spots as much as guard the player. Because, you know, he's not a great back cutter. That's not really his thing. But, you know, you're going to have to run some really good action. You're going to have to run some, maybe stagger some screens. You know, maybe have to run, you know, some pin downs and curls. Maybe have to do something with Juwan or Romeo or maybe Finnessy, somebody who you really have to respect on a drive to get him open. But he's certainly one of those guys you look at and you say you want to see Indiana get points for him. But, you know, you look at his last three games, he's 0 for 3 from three-point range with a total of 3 points. So they got to do something, I think, to try to get him going. And I think he's got to get himself going. I think the other thing he can do is be a little better rebounder. Do some things. Go get an offensive rebound. Get a putback. Get fouled. Go to the line. Find a way to create some points on your own. It's not really his strong suit. But I think when a player is struggling, if they can just go do something to impact the game, sometimes that helps offense come along.
Jeff Rabjohns, Peaks.com, my guest. I want to get into a little recruiting before we call it a day, but anything on Deron Davis? Had a couple people tweet in about him. Anything on him? He warmed up in that Michigan game on Sunday, and so I guess you could call it a game-time decision that he didn't play. But and I would say that's good news that he was able to go through warm-ups even. Do you think he'll return Friday? Any information on him and his injury?
Yeah, I think it's very possible. I wouldn't say it's definite right now because with an ankle, it can feel better, and then if you try to do something on it, it can feel worse. But I would say right now it's probably very, very possible that he returns on Friday, or is at least available. Like I said, how much he plays, even if he's healthy, may depend upon what Maryland's doing with the two bigs. Because if they're really doing inside-outside stuff with him, Deron struggles moving. Even when the ankles are healthy, Deron doesn't move well laterally. But as far as availability, his health, I think it's certainly very, very possible he's at least available on Friday at Maryland.
Jeff Rabjohns, Peaks.com. Recruiting, obviously Keon Brooks is the big target, still out there remaining uncommitted that Indiana fans very, very desperately want to land and add to the 2019 class with Trace Jackson Davis. That's the two primetime in-state recruits in that class to back up against the 2018 class headlined by Romeo. Outside of Keon Brooks, and I asked Mike Pegram this yesterday about Trendon Watford, was there any chance that he would ultimately land at Indiana, that family connection would help him become a Hoosier and maybe beat out some of the tough competition more closer to his family's home in Alabama? And Mike's pretty blunt answer to me was no. So my question to you is, outside of Keon Brooks, is there anyone else in the 2019 class that you could see Indiana making a serious run at to extend the at least a number of players in that class beyond what the Hoosiers already have? And that would include, obviously, Keon if he makes that decision.
Yeah, I mean, obviously everybody knows about Keon Brooks and where he's at. I'm glad to hear Mike say that because I've been answering questions on the message board since April telling people, look, I fully expect Trendon Watford to stay south. People are like, what? No, I think he's going to IU because of his brother's, you know, time there. And I'm like, I know that you guys remember seeing little Trendon running around the court. I know you love Christian. I get it. I'm telling you, everything Trendon has told me suggests it's more likely he's staying south. Every piece of information suggests that's the most likely path. And I think people are, and even Mike was like questioning, he's like, are you sure? I really think the Watfords love the IU. I'm like, yes, the Watfords do love IU. And even if Trendon goes somewhere else, the Watford family is still going to love IU because of Christian's time and how much they enjoyed it. But, like, this is, you know, Trendon is going to be able to make his own path, his own choice, and right now it's more than likely he's staying south. So I'm glad Mike finally is buying in, because that's certainly the most likely course of action for Trendon. Obviously, with recruiting, things can and do change. That's the obvious caveat. But right now, Trendon is most seriously looking at schools down south and seriously looking at making his own path. But nothing in the world wrong with that. As far as IU goes, I think The other guy that's really interesting is Harlan Beverly. He's a 6'4" guard, originally from Michigan, playing his senior year in Montverde Academy down there in Montverde, Florida. We had a chance to watch him play a number of times in AAU, up in Chicago, up in Milwaukee, over in Grand Rapids during the course of spring and summer. And he's, you know, he's a national top 100 level guy. I think he's still a 4-star level prospect, kind of a combo kind of guard. But he's the guy that IU assistant coach Bruiser Flint went down to Florida and watched recently. So IU's had a lot of recruiting activity there. There was another time they went down, I want to say fall. I don't have my notes right in front of me, but there's another time they went down to watch him work out. So there's been a lot of activity. There's been contact there. There's been some pretty regular communication with Beverly and the IU staff. So he's certainly a guy to look at it as a possibility. You know, I think, you know, Matthew Hurt's still on the radar. He's the 5-star, 6'10" forward from up in Minnesota. He played AAU basketball for D1 Minnesota, same team as Race Thompson played for. His dad runs that AAU program. So, you know, it's a very nuclear recruitment as far as the family's running the show. IU's been up there to see him during the season. So there remains involvement. I really think Kansas, Memphis, Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, I think those are really the main schools for Hurt, but he is still at least on the IU radar. you know, those are probably the main guys as far as high school guys right now. And it's not definite that IU would oversign. I think it's certainly possible. I certainly think if they got Keon Brooks and then they had a chance to add a guard, I'm very certain, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, Archie Miller would be very comfortable oversigning to add backcourt depth. So I think that's certainly something to look at. I do not think, you know, let's say Keon Brooks announces here in the next, anywhere from the next 2 to 6 weeks is possible for Keon. If he were to announce, that doesn't mean IU's definitely done. I've told people this for years, but the old school thing about counting available scholarships, like, you're wasting your time. Don't worry about it. Schools are going to recruit who they want to recruit, and they're going to figure it out later. So even if IU lands Keon, and if they have a chance at a guard, or if they feel like they have a chance at guard, I would expect recruiting activity to continue as far as backcourt prospects go.
Jeff Rabjohns, Peaks.com. Final question. Christian Lander of Evansville writes, he had 23 points, 8 rebounds last night in a narrow loss for Wrights down in the Pocket City. He's a name of interest, a name that's been very active, getting out and about, seeing a lot of college games. I know he's been at Louisville games just across the river a number of times this season. Indiana as well. Sophomore, a player in state that on a national level has a lot of notoriety in that sophomore class. Thoughts on him, how he's performed this high school season, and where, still at a very early point, IU stands with him and maybe some other younger in-state guys in that class?
Yeah, I think you know, Christian Lander is definitely one of the elite guys in Indiana in 2021. He's one of the best players in that class. He's grown to about 6'2", maybe a little more than that now. He can really handle the ball. He has change of speed and change of direction. And he plays with vision at speed, which means his eyes are up. And as he's moving with the ball in his hands with a live dribble, he can make a play. If somebody's open after his second dribble, he can make the pass. After his third dribble, he can make the pass. If nobody's open, he's got to go all the way to the rim. He can go all the way to the rim, even if it's 3 or 4 dribbles. And young guys oftentimes, especially guys who have speed and quickness, they don't have vision at speed. You have to teach them how to play with their eyes up and not just when they start to make a move. And I'm sure you've seen this with plenty of young guys. Oftentimes when they start to make a move, if they're going to try to score, when they start to make that move, the head goes down and they're getting around their defender and they're going to the rim to try to score regardless of what happens around them, because they're not where the vision isn't there. It's not about being selfish or unselfish. It's about vision. It's about an actual skill. And Lander has vision at speed, which is one of those things that really kind of separates guys. Some guys have vision, but they play slow. Some guys play fast, but have no vision. If you're a young guy, 10, 12 games into your sophomore year high school, and you're playing at speed with change of direction, and you have vision, those are the guys who have a chance to be elite when it's all said and done. He's scoring it really well. He's passing the ball really well. Certainly he showed in the AAU season, you know, what he could do with even more offensive weapons around him. I think we're going to continue to see even more of that moving forward. But he's definitely one of the guys you look at in Indiana in the 2021 class and say, you know, that's a guy who's, you know, an elite prospect. He's got to continue to make the improvement you expect him to make. But he's certainly a guy who you look at and say, you know, he's a five-star right now. And, you know, he's a guy who projects to, you know, have a chance to be a McDonald's All-American kind of guy. It has to happen. He's not there yet. But this is what McDonald's All-American guards look like when they're young. As far as other guys, I think it's going to be a pretty good class. Probably has some pretty good depth. Certainly have a couple of headliners, at least a couple at the top. The other five stars, Caleb Burst, 6'10", center from Fort Wayne Blackhawk. He went from being sort of like a big body on the block to a guy who is tall and got good strength and is bouncy. Even going back to April, he was finishing above the rim. He was blocking shots above the rim. When you get to the point you're playing above the rim, that's a really good sign. He catches the ball really well in the post. He moves really well inside. He's got tremendous balance for a tall, big kid who's actually put on some weight already. He'll need to continue to add weight as he moves toward college. But again, we're talking 12, 13 games into his sophomore year of high school. You don't want guys to get thick too fast. But he really has body control, great balance, good hands. I've seen him finish going over both shoulders. He's going to have to get better at that. But the fact that he's even doing it at all as a sophomore is a tremendous sign. So he's definitely on the list. I would certainly put Trey Kaufman from Silver Creek on the list. You know, he's really, really improving, maybe improving as rapidly as anybody. He's about 6'7", 6'8", kind of a face-up guy for right now. At least that's his best skill. Can put the ball on the deck some. He's a little bit slender, so he'll need to gain weight, but he's definitely got a really, really nice upside to him. And he's a guy who, because he really was still sort of kind of growing into his body in AAU, he didn't get a ton of early attention. But the way he's playing this season, the fact that he's playing in the state of Indiana, you know, and I think what he'll probably most likely do on the AAU circuit, I think he's a guy who's going to get a lot of attention. And I think he's a guy who, with his ability to put the ball on the deck, his size, his shot is really nice. It's actually above the head on the release. I think he's got a chance to take a big jump over the next couple of years. And it has to actually happen. But as far as guys who have potential to take big jumps, he's definitely on my list. Again, we're talking about Trey Kaufman from Silver Creek. Another guy really to watch is Pierce Thomas, the 6'4" guard from Brownsburg. Big-time athlete. You know, he's already had long jump marks that would, if they were in certain meets, would allow a high school player to, or high school athlete, to advance to national competition. So he is a big, big-time athlete. He had a couple dunks in some games that I've seen that high school players just don't do, as far as how far away he took off, how high he held it, and then when he got to the rim, you know, he just reached back and cocked it and cranked it. High school kids don't do that on a regular basis. High school sophomores most certainly don't do that on a regular basis, and he does it with ease. So he's a big-time athlete, about 6'4", decent length, again, superior athleticism. He's really developing as a player. I think the big thing is he's going to learn how to hit threes to become more of just a driver. He's got to become more than an athlete playing basketball, but he's done that. I mean, there are a couple of games he's hit multiple threes. He's had one game of 4 3-pointers. It's got to continue to happen for him, but he's certainly on the list. And then there are other guys as well. I mean, that class has got quite a few players. You know, Colson Montgomery from down south. Kurt Hoff from Forest Park is definitely another guy who's on the radar. So I think it's going to be a class that has a couple of headliners, maybe more than a couple of headliners, and is probably going to, I don't know if it's going to totally challenge the 2012 class for overall depth as far as kids who go high major, but it's certainly got a chance to move in that direction.
Jeff Rabjohns, Pigs.com. Jeff, tremendous, a marathon-like interview this week. You've given us lots of information about the Big Ten, the IU team, and, of course, recruiting to close out the interview. Thanks so much for the extended time today, and always great to catch up.
Anytime, man. Always enjoy talking with you. Have a great week, my friend.
Absolutely. Jeff Rabjohns with all kinds of information for you on this Wednesday edition of the Hoosier Report. That's going to wrap things up for today. Don't forget, if you miss a show, you miss a segment, we're available as a podcast as well. We're on SoundCloud. You can point your browser directly to soundcloud.com/Hoosier Report or download the free SoundCloud app. It's an easy way to play back our program as needed. Also, we're on Apple Podcast as well. You can just search the Hoosier Report and find us on there as well. Thanks for being with us today. IU at Maryland on Friday. Of course, we'll have the play-by-play with Don Fisher and crew here on the Big X Sports Radio. That's going to wrap it up. Have a great Wednesday. Back with you Thursday at 11 o'clock. We've got the great Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall joining us on Thursday. Lee Kelly is in studio with me as well on Thursday. And we've got our Southern Indiana basketball update where we'll take a complete look at high school basketball in the area over the last week or so. Have a great Wednesday. I'll talk with you tomorrow. It's the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.